Good morning, Yuma. This is attorney Adam Hansen, co-host of Life, Death, and the Law. For this week's episode, we wanted to take a minute and release a director's cut of stories that didn't make the first cut. The following clip is from our episode with Dr. Brown.
So I've been there, I'm going on my 28th year at Corona Optique.
Okay.
And there are five employees that have been there longer than me.
Really?
And so the system that's been there and the team that's in place, and we have another five probably that are over 20 years. So that type of teamwork and feedback from each part of the team is what's contributed to streamlining and making things a little more efficient. It's hard to control everything.
Yeah, it is. Oh, but I'll tell you that when we're looking at implementing a different step or even the furniture that we're choosing for a waiting room, my wife, Adam, his wife, they contribute to, okay, how's this going to look? Because we need an outsider's point of view. We live in it. We got this tunnel vision. Yeah. Every single time she brings up, well, Corona Optique does it this way.
That's a great compliment. And I'm sure all my staff's going to be listening to this podcast.
I'm sure they better.
and I'll make sure you put that in a little clip. I'd appreciate that. Yeah, no, unfortunately I have nothing to do with the decor. Otherwise it would have the same worse tunnel vision than you can imagine.
So. Yeah.
They don't even let me pick my own glasses. I've tried that a few times and they smile kindly and then say, how about these?
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
The big ones, it's the big 80s.
You know, it's been
your
so long.
Your oldest son used to rock those. He might still do it.
My kids do. Yeah, my kids have some different
those
flavors.
Those are back in style, I guess, now. But
I do. If you ever want to see the glasses from the 80s, I have a few of them in my office that I wore at Woodard and Ecofa.
Nice.
Well, I did look up Neuralink.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so I was curious what you were going to say about that.
Here's what AI says about it. It says Neuralink is a neurotechnology company that develops brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs, to help people with paralysis and other medical needs, including blindness.
Yeah. So they have developed... So the technology they've used... is they have scanned the brain long enough to be able to read your thoughts.
Yikes.
And so by hooking this up, you think move cursor to the right and you operate the computer. So they have been able to map what you're thinking and it's able to direct things that you can't physically. So it's amazing for people that have quadriplegic.
And that's the case study. The very first patient from Yuma that has it, he's a quadriplegic from about the shoulders down and an avid gamer, very good at it.
Yep.
It's crazy
really?
To watch him.
Hmm?
Yeah. He just sits there, looks at the computer and it's playing games and doing all sorts of stuff.
From
and
his
do whatever
thoughts.
He wants.
Well, how does it help with vision loss?
Not yet.
Oh.
But think of the reverse.
Okay.
If they know what you're thinking, how long is it going to be before they can influence what you're thinking?
Yeah.
So they hook up a camera and they learn to feed that to the part of your brain that interprets vision.
Okay.
So people have talked about eye transplants. I don't think your eyes are going to be transplanted. I think they're going to learn how to feed the information in that they're already reading on the way out.
Interesting.
So,
and then, this is an Elon Musk company. How much time does this guy have? It's just, does he sleep?
I don't know, but back on the thought of eye transplants and this type of technology, they do have an implant that they have put in the retina, in the very back part of the eye, that is interpreting and sending it to the brain. It sees, from what I understand, and I didn't look this up before I left, it sees shapes. I don't know if it sees colors, but it helps people that are completely blind be able to navigate,
wow.
I believe. So the fact that you've got this thing working fully on the outside, it's going to be interesting. I think that's going to be the fastest way for complete blindness to recover.
That's amazing. So now I'm going to go to the opposite. What is something that is kind of a dread that you either experienced in your career? It could be a one-time deal or a daily grind type issue that you wish you could avoid.
I guess the one-time issue or such is just there's been a time or two where my schedule was too much, where I had booked too many patients. It was too hard to keep up, wasn't giving it the time it needed. It's been decades since that's occurred. And it was a learning process early on. And so that would have been the only thing that, I mean, it's always a sad moment to be talking with someone who's starting to lose their vision and I can't help. Mm-hmm. It's, but in the same vein, you're helping them make it through that time as well. So really when you talk about being regimented, when I don't have a well-regimented schedule, then it's not fun. Otherwise,
that's what stresses you out more than anything.
For sure. Uh-huh. I know that there's three patients waiting and I'm 45 minutes behind. That's almost untenable.
You mentioned your personality before, like it aligns with what you're doing on a daily basis. So would you consider yourself, I don't even know if this is the right term, but OCD, you know, you like things.
So I know OCD people and, I definitely don't fit the,
I don't even know what the diagnosis, you know, the medical diagnosis. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. But we all kind of seem like we diagnose each other. You know, you're OCD because you're more clean.
You throw that around. Well, being clean or it's regimented kind of.
And I think really one of the, and obviously this isn't my field of expertise, but I think that one of the indications of OCD is when your regiment rules you and not, and it gets in the way of you doing daily activity.
It's an impediment.
And so I know people. I mean, you've seen it in the movies. What's the one with Helen Hunt and Nick? As Good as It Gets.
Yes.
As Good as It Gets.
Jack Nicholson.
Nicholson. Yeah. And so that's when your life, when you can't get out the door because you're going through your routines, when you can't have a relationship because your routines are more, that's OCD. Okay. Can I be meticulous at times? Sure. Mm-hmm. And I think the older I get, the less that's a thing, but, I like order.
So what do you, typically a common topic that we like to bring up is for the Gen Zers out there.
Okay.
Because I've personally seen a difficulty with them, adapting to a career path that takes a lot of concentration and a lot of sacrifice, because the instant gratification that's been presented to them through our society over time, especially social media. And so what advice would you have for somebody that wants to get into their dream career, or even a career that's just highly satisfying like you seem to have attained here?
So I'll speak just to optometry. And that is the great thing about our profession is many times you can set your own schedule depending on your employer, but 2 days a week, 3 days a week, 4 days a week, you can find work. Sometimes the daily scheduling of patients is hard to negotiate with an employer, but oftentimes you can set your own schedules and have more flexibility in a profession where when I started, it was what it was. I mean, I've only taken a day and a half off for a called off of work in 27 years. So.
Well, I'm not trying to cater to the Gen Zers. I'm trying to tell them what is the hard dose of medicine that they need to take in order to achieve the level of success that you've seemed to have achieved.
So I think the only thing that speaks to any generation is the school of hard knocks. There's nothing that I'm going to say that's going to make a difference in their life. My parents have been trying to tell me things for 50 years. I'm still not listening. I love my parents. Uh-huh. Shout out to great parents. But life teaches you some tough stuff. And maybe some of the things that I find different or hard to adjust to may be healthy. I mean, not having an overcommitment to work and having more focus on life. Who's to say that's the wrong thing? So finding a way for us to work together and make it through. But you say, what can you say to them? Certain things we learn in life through pain and discomfort. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's some of that ahead.
Getting bored is sometimes a necessity.
I love, when's the last time we were bored?
Right.
You left me here for a few minutes. What did I do? Pulled out my phone, started playing some games. I haven't been bored in a while. So that's supposed to kill your creativity.
Right. And going to school day in and day out for 8 years is boring at times and drudgery.
I hated it.
But if you had to do it again?
Oh, I'd select this career again, and I would pay the price to be here.
So, and I guess that's what I'm aiming at is there's it seems to be a real focus for the shortcut. And sometimes there just isn't a shortcut. And knowing that and just accepting that reality can be very helpful as opposed to spending all your time looking for the shortcut.
An interesting side note to that is as you were talking about rewarding professions, I think of some of my colleagues that I graduated with who hate optometry.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so after 4 years of school, they got done and they said, man, if I knew what this was, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
And so for those that grinded for 4 years, got themselves a debt to where they had to work to get out, I don't know. You know, sometimes you don't take the shortcut and you wish you did.
Okay.
So I'm fortunate. I feel very fortunate to have landed in a place that matches my personality and gives me fulfillment. But it took walking away from different other options I started on.
Well, everything's an opportunity cost.
It is.
You're going to school, you're giving up starting your own business and getting some, you know, instant money back. I was talking to another person the other day about individuals that were contemplating going on for an advanced degree or continuing in a lawn care business. And my lean was get your advanced degree. I'm not as hardcore about that. I don't automatically think that school is for everybody, and certainly more and more I think that school is becoming watered down and there's a lot of information out there that is not only not helpful but flat out wrong. And so it actually hurts people more than it helps them to go through that structure of school. But the individual talked to me back and he was very successful. And he said, you know what? I was going through dental school and there was a guy that he was working on his lawn business to get through dental school. And in the third year of dental school, he quit because he's making $900,000 in his lawn business. He just happened to be a really good businessman. And anything you work hard at and are consistent and you provide good service and good products, you're going to have... you're going to have customers wanting that. And so he decided that's the way I want to go. And he ends up, he's a multimillionaire now. He's done several businesses, not all of them dealing with lawn care, but it was the process of, okay, keeping your eyes wide open, but also being, dedicated enough to follow through on hard things.
Have you heard of the book, The Millionaire Next Door?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great book.
It is.
It's right up there with Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
I prefer the first.
Okay. Tell me why.
It points out what you were talking about, the return on investment, cost benefit. Mm-hmm. And so it talks about those that choose not to go into education, who begin earning right away, who stay within their means. And you think of my case in particular, I didn't only delay my earnings for 8 years, I went into debt negative.
Yeah.
And what they also point, so now I'm 12 years behind, 16 years behind someone who started their lawn care business out of high school. Oftentimes.
But do you catch up and then surpass? That's the question.
So the second thing that comes is they talk about in that book that many people with advanced degrees feel the need to live a certain level of lifestyle.
Yeah, they feel like they deserve this
house,
higher end of luxury.
New car. And so oftentimes continue the debt cycle and in the long run are no better off. So, and they use statistics throughout the entire book. You can catch up, slingshot by. Is it possible for those with lawn to do the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would say to education and post-grad is to have something in mind you're working for and to always be searching for that niche. One of the reasons I moved past accounting, which I have my bachelor's in accounting, is I couldn't picture how I was going to apply it. I didn't want to be a tax accountant. And at the time, the industry was very interesting. It probably still is. And I couldn't picture where I was going to make my niche. And so optometry, I knew what I would be doing. I knew I would have a trade. Mm-hmm. And so if you can find a trade that is marketable and allows you to work hard and provide for yourself, then find that trade, whether it takes 8 years, 12 years, or two. So so when you talk about school or not, I think it, and it's also a good, if you're not going into debt for it and you don't know what you're going to do, I think it's
working your way through school.
Yes.
Is a good education regardless of where you go, because it's the work ethic and the ability to understand and appreciate what you're aiming toward. Whereas if you just go to school because that's the next step that everybody does and mom and dad are paying for it, I think it can be very detrimental.
I agree.
Good morning, Yuma. This is attorney Adam Hansen, co-host of Life, Death, and the Law. The last clip was from our episode with Dr. Brown, and now we want to take you back to one of our first episodes with Chris Thompson. We hope you enjoy.
So you're a lawyer, and you specialize in estate planning.
Mm-hmm.
If I came to you and I say, hey, I want you to defend me in a murder trial, could you do it?
Yeah, and that's in my mind, that's the analogy
sure.
I was drawing.
Sure. Then I'd visit you in jail.
Sure, yeah, and then I'd say, okay, you know, yeah. So it's similar to that. Can you do it? Yes. Is that what you want to bet your $1 million, $2 million, $4 million, $10 million project on? Maybe for an architect. And it doesn't cost anymore, typically. We're not the cheapest in town, but in a lot of cases, you don't want the cheapest in town.
Mm-hmm.
Because the architecture and engineering fees, the design is what's so crucial. Those construction documents are what's so crucial to ensure that once it goes into construction, there aren't conflicts. You don't have water coming into your building. You don't have a roof that sheds water onto a roof that wasn't designed to take that amount of water.
Yeah.
There's a lot of places
where the rain spout goes out right where the ticket center is.
There you go. There you go. And you saw what they did. They took it underground and got it out there, but there you go. So there's a lot of places to stumble in the design process and the construction process. When it moves into construction, they're expensive to fix.
Mm. Yeah.
So one of the things we tell our clients is, yes, our fees are not as low as that other guy. It might just be a few thousand dollars more, but I guarantee you the quality of the construction drawings will save you 10 times that in the construction process.
Yeah.
So, and that's true. I'm not trying to, you know,
no.
promote myself.
We live by that policy ourselves. In fact, we see it every day. Yesterday, yeah. I had a client come in and they presented a will, and it was not witnessed. It was notarized. And so it looked great. You know, it looked like somebody who either got online and got a good template for a will, went and prepared it, and it stated who they wanted to act as their executor, or we call them personal representatives, so they have the control over administering the estate and who they wanted to receive it. And this person was unmarried with no children. And so it's really important, because if you want it all to go to your children, then the state default statutes tend to go that way. But if you have a blended family, or if you want it to go disproportionately to someone else, in this case, his life partner, then the will has to stand up. Otherwise, it's going to go to the next of kin.
Right.
And in this case, we've yet to find out what's really going to happen. There's a potential we could find other witnesses, but it's going to be a whole lot of work right now. And he probably spent $400 on this will.
Okay.
And if he would have spent literally 10 times that, $4,000, 100 times that, $40,000.
Which he never would.
Yes. He would. His estate is probably around $400,000. If he would have spent $40,000 on it, he would be in a much better position than his family is being left in now, because we don't know who it's going to go to, but I'm fairly certain it's not going to go to the one he wants.
And they'll likely lose what he thought he was saving in the will development. They'll Absolutely. Lose significantly more than that in the probate.
And that's only the money aspect, not to mention they've lost him and they're mourning. And now they're going to go through this stressful situation of
now it's a fight
court, potential, being, on the outs with the family and loss of sleep at night, their health, all of that goes along with it. It's not just the money, right? It's how much do you value a good night's sleep?
Right. So when you're going to do a will, you want to find an estate attorney. You don't want to go to a trial attorney to do your will or to just an online service. It's true in everything. You get what you pay right. for. So when you're looking to design a building, it would make sense to go to people that design buildings
all the time. Sure.
Yeah. And so that's not to say that civil engineers aren't able to do it. Yuma will show you they do it, mm-hmm. you know, is that the best? I'm going to tell you it's not the best. And the product tends to show for itself.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, that doesn't happen in a lot of places outside of Yuma. It's kind of a Yuma.
Yuma is a land of opportunity because there is a lack of professionals. And with Right. a lack of professionals, there's a lack of competition.
Sure.
And with that comes, we have to settle for what we can find. When there's competition, it increases the quality because now you're competing against, if you're not going to produce this quality, I'm going to go to this other guy that's going Right. to do it. Where in
that's if quality is important to you. If the only thing that's important to you is cost, that's a completely different.
Well, but competition reduces cost at the same yes, time absolutely. Of potentially increasing quality.
Absolutely. So there's a balance in that. You don't need to go and pay 10, 12, 15% of your construction budget to hire an architect or engineering team. You know, so nationally there's pretty much an average of what that costs.
Okay.
So we can't go and just completely blow the doors off and charge somebody, you know, an outrageous fee. Why? I won't get the work. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much a believer in, I don't need to retire off of your project. Mm-hmm. So if I do a good job and I do it at a reasonable fee that you're happy with, you'll come to me for your next one. And then you'll come to me for your one after that. And I've been blessed to have a long list of return clients that keep me busy. Working with new clients is always exciting and fun. But there is you got to convince them that you're worth it. You have to convince them that you're worth it. And so we do a lot of things that are included in our fee that other firms might charge additional fees for. And we do that because we think they're important. They're critical to the project, like the 3D modeling and the rendering and all of that. Other firms, you might pay additional for that. It might not be in their basic fees. But it's going to give you assurance that if you're trusting me with $2 million of your budget, that you're getting $2 million worth of product. If you have to pay $10,000, $40,000, $100,000 to correct construction conflicts in the field because the drawings were slapped together for a cheap fee, you're going to remember that and you're not going to come back to me. So it's my responsibility to do it affordably, meet the budget, have as little construction. No drawings are perfect. So, and it's in our contract, actually, you can't expect perfection. But we can certainly, by doing a thorough experience process of delivering the drawings, we can certainly minimize construction conflicts, which is where the dollars really are. You know, to change out a beam, you know, you might be talking $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 if it didn't quite meet with the wall correctly because we didn't develop that part of the design. We just said, throw a beam in and get this thing out the door. I don't have enough fee for it, blah, blah, blah. So, and unfortunately that happens. That happens in Yuma where we... there's some of our competitors kind of,
as attorneys, we're regulated by the state bar of Arizona. Where you practice, you've got a bar and we call it a self-regulated profession. And so really those regulations come in the form of ethics rules. Sure. And going back to your comparison of us doing a murder trial, yes, we can do it with our licenses, but we would probably be opening ourselves up to huge ethics problems, because there is a rule that says if you're practicing kind of outside your scope in a territory that you often don't practice in, then you need to kind of have help. You need to be bouncing your ideas off somebody, or you could be liable for violating
the ethics. That's a perfect example of why you use those specialized engineers. When I'm designing the structure, I could, but I want an expert to do it. No, and they're let part of my
liability.
Team.
Sure.
Exactly.
So you guys are regulated, I'm guessing, by kind of ethics rules as well.
Well, yes. Yes, we do. We also have the state registrar that manages complaints and investigates complaints.
The contractor? The registrar of contractors?
Oh, they do that so as there's, well. Okay. Well, there's a technical board of registration. So
for architects.
For architects, land surveyors, civil engineers, structural engineers. We're managed under a different board. And so complaints are reviewed and those kinds of things, and they happen.
Yeah.
And so we're also regulated that one of the, you know, we have the city building officials who get an extra set of eyes on the plans to, you know, and they'll call us on things that, hey, I'm not sure if this is safe. Can you provide some additional information? And then we dig into it and maybe we have to make some adjustments. And so I appreciate their review. Good example is we did a project. We had a performance specification for a portion of the project, which means we don't detail it. We don't design it. The contractor hires a specialized engineer to design it and do that. That contractor turned those drawings into the city. The city did a spot check on some of the calculations and determined that this was in failure.
Mm-hmm.
So this structure would fail.
Wow.
And called that civil engineer practicing structural engineering into their office to say, you need to defend these numbers. And he had missed a wind load, and had that structure been built, and this was in this case, it was a fence, a tall fence, like a backstop. Baseball field. Had that been built the way it was designed, once the wind reached a certain level, that thing was coming down. And so you need those checks, you need those balances. And so it's important when you're designing a building that you have the right people doing it.
Your dad was a banker growing up, but did you have any experience? And you have a lot of friends that are in construction. And so did you have any experience growing up by chance before you went into architecture? Because this is a common complaint that I hear. I have relatives. I have my wife's family is deep into the construction world here in Yuma. And so oftentimes as I would walk job sites, the common complaint is the architects don't know what they're doing.
Right.
They don't know the real, like when you're really here or else they wouldn't design it like this.
Sure. And there's probably a little bit of truth to that, but there doesn't have to be. We do quite a bit and spend quite a bit of time in drawing those details. And we actually, in order to get those right, we'll reach out to specific contractors. If we're trying to do a structural steel connection, we'll actually reach out to them and say, hey, this is what we're trying to accomplish. How do you think we should do that? You know? Mm-hmm. And so they'll provide input that then ends up in the plans and then makes it easier for them to build. But again, you can't detail and draw every connection and every obstacle and difficulty as you're building in 3D space.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to encounter conflicts. One of the things we do is once the drawing is out, the contractors are required to do shop drawings. And so the steel contractor will then kind of regurgitate back to us his understanding of how we think that structure is going to be built. And then in that, he'll make suggestions, modifications, discussions.
That's good.
So there's a place for that. By the time it hits the ground and it's being erected, that's not when you want to hear about well, shoot, now we can't get to the back of this bolt because it's covered up by this mm-hmm. other plate. You want to, and so that's why we go through those checks and balances. So there's the architect's drawings, which include the structural engineer's drawings. Those go then to a contractor. The contractor then reviews those and he send it out to the steel guy, the electrical guy, the plumber, the electrician. They all look at those and then they come back to us with questions, suggestions. Hey, I think we could save some money if we did it this way. Do you have any issue with that? Because we've realized now we're not going to be able to get to this bolt, you know, does it make sense to shift this beam out 2 inches? What ramifications are that? So yeah, we absolutely appreciate that insight. So we'll look at it and go, oh, you know what? Yeah, we didn't account for this pop out that's now going to block access to that for future maintenance or service. And so let's make an adjustment. It's really a concert. It's a team effort. And what we the contractors, I don't see them always as an
adversarial role.
Yeah, contrarian or anything. It really is.
I was just going to ask.
We're all working for the same person.
Sure.
Exactly. I want to get hired again. You, Joe Contractor, want to get hired again. Yeah. So let's work together to
I wondered make if there this wasn't client a, happy. Certain, I mean, when you get a lot of lawyers together, there's egos, right?
Oh, sure.
So that's why we tend to like not want to be together.
Yeah.
So is there a...
Funny, because certain lawyers love being together because they just love slapping each other on the back. And other lawyers don't. Adam and I tend to be along the ladder. And yeah, we don't like to be around a whole bunch of other lawyers. We like to do what we do. And I welcome feedback on my contracts, especially on wills and trusts, because if they think there's going to be a problem, I want to examine that. But I found that people who either, I don't know, that feel offended if you bring something up, they maybe have a little less confidence. And so they jump directly into that defensive mode and they think they've got to overcompensate and become defensive. Whereas I really just want it to work. And I'm comfortable that I've done it enough times that if I'm missing something, please point it out to me. I know that I'm competent in general, but I'm also fallible. And I want to understand where those errors are so I can correct them. But I found that, yes, in large groups of attorneys, when we go to continuing education courses, people never want to speak out about what their concerns are in their practice because they never want to...
You don't want to look like you don't know.
Make it obvious that they don't know all the answers. And that is a huge weakness.
And that's what I was getting to. So I think that's maybe the general idea or sense that I get with professionals as a whole. If we're dealing with like investment advisors and there's a certain professional level. I think that when you're at that level, there's just a lot of egos going on. And we're not in the drama. So
our last clip, we are taking it back to the conversation with David Ibarra. We hope you enjoy.
That's a very interesting story. But I went on vacation. It's different when you go on vacation somewhere than living there.
Yeah.
So when I'd visit my sister, oh, this is fun. Mayberry, everyone's nice. Good place to raise your family. One Fontana had a drive-by near my house. Mm-hmm. Gangbanger shot another gangbanger. I have a young daughter.
Yeah.
I have a wife. Am I going to raise her here? Mm-hmm. So the opportunity came, sold my house. In the blind, I go to Arkansas.
And you'd retired by
that time. I had it by PERS, and I got a job offer in Arkansas. Real bad pay. But anyway, I thought about the wife can stay at home, daughter can go to school, house is paid off.
Yeah.
No brainer.
Sure.
It's a cultural shock.
Really?
Everything's slow. One thing you do not do when you roll into another state, take off your California plates. Because when we rolled in and bought our house cash, at the time it was $200,000 for a McMansion. But the minute, this is the thing that were the three strikes for me, going to another state. I'm from California. I'm Mexican American. I'm a Raiders fan, and I have a pit bull for a pet. So when I rolled in to Arkansas, there was no cookies. Welcome to the neighborhood. It's there goes the neighborhood.
Oh, no.
And it was 14 years of hell.
Really?
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, that's too
when
bad.
I put that Raider flag out first football season, I was labeled. And I got a job there. As they, believe it or not, they needed a bilingual cop because they have the Tyson Chicken Plant. And the Tyson Chicken Plant, we have a lot of raza that works there.
Yeah, okay.
So my interview went something like this with the chief. Ibarra, I like you because you speak Mexican. And we got all these people from Guatemala, El Salvador, and those parts of Mexico. And I'm sitting there going, holy crap, what? Did you just fuse everything together? Yeah, like, El Salvador, I mean, Guatemala is different than Guadalajara.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was like, oh, well. But anyway, I kept my mouth shut, got a job.
At least you could understand them,
sort of. Sort of. And after years and years, and then another thing my sister didn't tell me about is tornadoes. So you hear a siren, I call my sister, what do? She goes, get in the tub, get mattresses and put mattresses over Amy and Allie. Why? Because it's a tornado.
Oh, no.
Storms were horrible. Bugs the size of small children.
Really?
Their best Mexican food. We got Taco Bell.
Oh, okay. No.
Anyway, make a long story short.
Really selling it.
It was not a fit. It was not a fit. it was not a fit. I've never been in snow. I don't know if you've ever.
They have snow there?
They have snow. Northwest Arkansas, they have snow. So no. Black ice. I've never driven. Have you ever driven on black ice?
I've driven in ice, never black ice.
Black ice is horrible, and I didn't get the memo. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I slipped on it going outside to get the paper. So, I finally, out of a scene of the movie, our house gets hit by lightning. Adam, it gets hit. And I says, you know, I really don't like it out here. I've been called every name. This is just not a good fit. And I told my wife, I go, you know, it'd be nice to live in a place where the sun comes out every day. I never want to see tornadoes. I don't want to see snow. I want sun.
Yeah.
Do you know, Adam, when you Google sunniest
place in the U.S.?
Guess what comes up?
I've heard this.
Yuma. Yeah. Yuma.
Yeah.
So we're in Arkansas. I start bringing up YouTube videos of Yuma. One of the things I saw was Midnight at the Oasis. And I'm like, wow, look at this, look at this, look at this. And I go, and it's 360 days the sun comes out. Oh, it's hot as hell, but we're not going to ever have to worry about winter.
Mm-hmm.
We, May, March of 2020.
Pandemic.
Right before pandemic, we went on the Expedia and got a flight from Arkansas to Dallas. And, you know, we got two flights here at our airport here in Yuma, Dallas and Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
So we went Arkansas, Dallas, Phoenix. Correction, Yuma. We landed here in Yuma from Dallas. And it was in March of 2020. I got the room at Shiloh Inn. We stayed here for 3 weeks.
Wow.
We knew the minute we got on that plane that said Yuma, when I got on that plane with my wife, I said, look at the people on this plane, Amy. And you saw the people relaxed, tanned, T-shirts. I don't even know what Algodones was, but I put a lot of Algodones T-shirts. I go, wow, look at that, Baja California. Flip-flops, just relaxed. We land here in Yuma. When that plane opens up and we step on the tarmac, you got that desert air. I just go, God, this is great. We go down there. We'll never forget this guy named Josh. We rented a car. We rented a small Toyota. He says, is this your first time in Yuma? Yeah, welcome. He goes, you know, I'm going to upgrade you to a Toyota 4Runner.
That's sweet.
He did. We go down Pacific. We look to our left. We saw Walmart. We're good. So we went to Shiloh Inn. We stayed there. They got the biggest pool in Yuma, by the way.
Oh, they do?
Yes, they do. And we went and explored Yuma. We went to downtown. We went to Midnight at the Oasis. We went to Algodones. And we're just looking around. Everyone's nice. I'm at Target here at Palms. I talked to Lady Janet. I go, Janet, good place for retirement. You know, and he goes, well, I live here at Coyote Ranch. Go check it out. We go check it out. I meet a Vietnam vet. He's selling his house.
Mm.
How much do you want for it?
Deal.
Let me just get back to Arkansas and sell our house.
Mm.
We go back to Arkansas. We made our decision. We says, we're here and we're not too far from,
it's
from Anaheim.
We're not half, 3 hours.
You know, we just loved it. Loved it. fly back, put my house up for sale, and all the looky-loos, the neighbors that didn't like me, come out, and he goes, they saw the for sale sign. Are you selling your house? No, I just put this sign for the hell of it.
Stupid.
And we didn't like each other, so they go, where are you moving to? He goes, I got deported to Mexico. And to this day, I never told him where I was going. So we sold the house and got our U-Haul and moved here and been here ever since.
That's awesome. And about 5 years ago.
May 22nd, we arrived here in Yuma with our U-Haul truck and our two vehicles and Raider flag. But this time...
There's a lot more Raider flags here.
Yes, there is. There is. But this time, remember, we didn't have California plates. We had Arkansas plates. So there were some people... scratching their head, but we kept the low profile.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, let's just be cool. And in the five years since yesterday, I've kept busy here in Yuma, kept busy with my VFW.
Oh, okay.
I kept busy running for school board.
Yes.
Where I've been embraced. Mm-hmm. Yuma embraced my wife and I. We didn't know anybody here in town. Okay. In 14 years in Arkansas, we never had dinner at a person's house. Really? Our neighbors, no, we just didn't. They didn't talk to us. We didn't talk. I'm going to go on the limb here, but they don't, there's very racial out there. Uh-huh. That's what I'm going to say in Arkansas. It's very racial. And okay. See a Mexican guy married to a white woman. It's difficult. It was just...
It's crazy.
It's crazy, but that's the way it is. It was very hurtful being there in Arkansas. I never would go back there. Very, very hurtful. So here we get embraced where we have dinners with family. I never knew what a progressive dinner was. It was where you go to...
Oh, you go to... Yeah, yeah.
And my wife and I, what is this, you know? Mm-hmm. We've been embraced here in my parish, being a volunteer at the parish, at the food bank. Our food pantry, I mean, and then I couldn't stay retired. So I got a job here at the middle school.
Oh, you
did? As a crossing guard.
Oh, very cool.
And I thought to myself, well, I directed traffic in downtown. How hard is it at 24th and Otondo? Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I almost got hit 3 times.
Yeah.
So I got back in the workforce and worked here and actually made it all the way to, I got a job offer for custodian. I says, you know, I've done everything else. Why not?
Over at Otondo?
At Castle Dome Middle School.
Where my kids go.
Yeah, Mr. Gettings. Nice boss.
Principal Gettings.
Yes,
yeah.
Good. So, and now I get to go to their graduation ceremony as a board member.
Very cool.
Mr. Ponder, who's going to be the new superintendent.
Very cool.
So, that's where life, what's Yuma done for us? I have a saying, Yuma gusta, is my saying about Yuma. It's embraced us. It's a beautiful community. And the people here and the Mexican food. In fact, right now I'm going to stands.
Are you going to stand?
Yeah, I'm going to stand. So this is what Yuma's done for us. And... We everything we need is in Yuma. When people say, you can go to Costco. No, I got everything I need here. Sam's Club. I got everything I need here in Yuma. We just have so many beautiful things here. San Luis, for example, we take our dog to Dr. Sergio, where the veterinarian clinic's at. You park your car at McDonald's in San Luis, cross over, they pick you up. Mm. And they take care of you. Yeah, it's a veterinarian. Pretty cool. It's pretty good. It's called Centro the Veterinario on 5th Street in San Luis, in Dr. Sergio. They pick you up at the border.
Wow.
And with your dog.
Uh-huh.
Take you there.
Take you back.
Shots are $40.
Wow.
Everything's a lot. They have full 24-hour, 7 days a week service.
Very cool.
So we go to San Luis. And then while in San Luis, we go to Tortas de Efe. Their tortas are good. So
I've had that.
It's pretty good. But like I said, that's what, I'm sorry I was long-winded. This is all from memory. I'll be showing you pictures of this burn pit so you'll know what they look like.
I want to see those.
But that's why I sent you some of my stuff. And you did receive the pictures.
I feel like we've barely even scratched the surface here. We might have to have you back.
Well, I would love to come back, and thank you for allowing me to talk about this autobiography. Yes, the vent. And and like I say, Californians, fellow Californians, adapt to where you go to. Leave your ideas back home. It was great to be from the Golden State. Unfortunately, it's not what it is. And some of us have had
to flee. It's not a good fit anymore.
It's not a good fit. It's very expensive. I have relatives that are still paying up to $3,000 rent a month. But I tell my relatives how hot it is because I don't want them here. So
they haven't. It's like, yeah, it's a little secret.
Right? So, yeah, it's my secret. So we, they say, hace mucho calor. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it does. Yeah. So we, like I said, adapt to where you're living and embrace it. And I just like I embraced Yuma. I love this place. This is my home now. And this is where I intend to stay until I'm at the veterans home here in Yuma. And I have
the street.
Down the street, I have my room reserved. So when I,
maybe you can work duty there.
Well, I could probably do that too. And
you'd be a resident for half the pay or something.
Half the pay, yes, and do the security. But like I said, it's an honor to be here in Yuma. Honor to be embraced like we have, my wife and I. And it's just a beautiful place to live.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.